on that computer know who you
don't
are.
Don't they have any idea?
Bow down to the Tech Talk host.
That's right, that's right, that's right.
Behold the glory that is
a little while ago, I was installing some software, and I ran across this exact same
thing. I find you pompous, judgmental, and completely self-absorbed. Would you be my friend?
A Windows Vista machine.
You would think?
You'd think there'd be no problem.
How could there be a problem with that?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Directory permissions with config.msi directory, blah, 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 blah.
This is Tech
Talk.
Good morning. Oh, man. All right. You know, we've got a great show. You're listening to Tech Talk on WRLR. Hey, Mr. Dave Sparky Saganaki, do we have you there? Oh, you know what? We're having problems at the moment with our with some of our audio stuff. Dave, are you hearing me now, maybe? Yeah, I can vaguely, very, very vaguely hear Dave in the background there, but not super well. Let's try.
I can speak louder.
There he is. There he is. We got him. We got him. You know what it was? We just... We had you set up on the wrong speaker setting for our board. So we got Skype working. Everything's working great, guys. I'm looking at Mr. Rusty, who was having troubles all morning with it. If he wants to step inside, I will point and show him exactly what I changed so he can do it in the future. I don't know why that happens, but sometimes we just lose our you know, it's a tech thing. That's what it is. We're on Tech Talk. It's a tech thing, and we got it worked out. So good morning, Dave. How you doing?
Thank goodness you're there.
I don't hear that often enough.
Yeah, I know.
Usually it's quite the opposite.
I meant it ironically, incidentally.
Well, yeah, okay, now it makes sense. Now that fits into my world. I understand it now. Oh man. You know, you've been hyperactive on the Facebook this morning and posting just, you know, so many interesting articles and things going on. I'm not even going to try to bring the news to the table today. Before we do that, though, I'm just going to prep people, give it a little teaser. In about 20 minutes here, we are going to bring on Rob DiNuzzo from Roboform. It's Roboform Rob. Roboform. I want to call it Roboform. He's going to be on, and he's going to talk to us about passwords, dual authentication, security, all these kind of cool things, figuring out how to make you safe in what you do online and with your accounts and everything else that's going on. You know, Roboform also has a product that helps you do that, but we're really just going to focus generally on how you can be safer online and all sorts of cool stuff. So stick around for that. But then Dave is turning into Mr. Dave Newsfeed Saganaki. So I want to hear some of the stuff you're most excited about.
First of all, I can't wait to hear about Roboform. You got me doing it now. There's a tremendous need for security. I can't wait to hear that segment. It'll be fantastic. Is Jay Garman going to be on today?
No. Unfortunately, Jay is out today supporting a friend who.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
who
right.
had some tragedy in their life, and you know, good for Jay. That's what being a good person is all about, and he certainly fits the bill there. You know, helping and support the people around him. So he will not be with us. So we'll have some time to talk, and like I said, you should stick around for our Roboform conversation too.
Fantastic. We'll miss Jay, but he's got, you know, good things to take care of. Google expects public to be driving driverless cars. That's an oxymoron, isn't it? In 2 to 5 years.
Oh, okay. Okay. 2 to 5 years.
Is that something we care about?
Well, that's one of my, remember, that was one of my predictions for 2015, that we would see a regularly scheduled commuter vehicle that was autonomous,
right,
in operation here today. So,
but you thought it would be like more like a bus or something, or
yeah. And I think that'll happen first. I think that'll happen before we get individual cars that are commuter, you know, that are autonomous. But 2 to 5 years that we see those in regular operation, you know, it's I can't wait. I just can't wait till it starts happening. I'm a friendly person, but boy, I just hate people. Every time I have to drive, I just hate people so much.
Oh, dude, you got to learn to forgive and forget.
I know. I was like,
you know, we all drive terrible. When you hate people, it's usually you think, well, I drive so much better than them. But it's not true. We just think we drive better than everybody else.
Don't destroy my illusions, Dave. I have precious little to hold on to at this moment, and that's one of them, that I'm that better driver out there. I think, though, that the world would be a safer place. I think that we'd get places quicker. I mean, there's so many benefits to just having, you know, these, you know, cars driven by somebody other than us, really.
I really like to drive a lot. And what I worry about is, and I never thought it would happen, right? But, like, for instance, GPS. Once a device is doing something for you or overtaking a skill for you, you offload that function from your brain, and you're no longer as good as you were at that skill. I don't pay wherever the GPS tells me to go, I go. And I don't care that much about where I, you know, where I am or what. I just point me, I'll get there. So with a driverless car, I worry about that same thing, that everybody will forget how to drive.
But if you don't have to drive, then does it matter? You've got brain space for something else, learning how to draw or learn a new language or something.
But Michael, stuff goes wrong. Well, here's the thing. Oh, here's the other thing, an important aspect of this. Google wants to put they've contracted with a company that builds prototypes for the big car companies, right? And they want to build 15 cars or something. I forget what it is, but they want them devoid of steering wheels, brake pedals, and gas pedals. They don't want any driver controls other than, you know, telling the car where to go. And in California, most of the other states that allow driverless cars allow for that, but not in California. California wants you to have driver controls in there in case something goes wrong.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is going to go wrong that manual intervention would help with? I mean, there's a lot of moving parts when you add a steering wheel, when you have pedals and so on, that you don't really need if the computer's running it. Anything that would be disastrous enough, I'm just thinking this through. I don't know if this is true or not, but I'm just wondering if there's anything that would be disastrous enough that would keep the vehicle from operating, that you would still yet be able to manipulate these very large, cumbersome pieces of equipment.
I don't know. I guess it all comes down to how reliable it is.
Yeah.
Or how reliable it becomes. And you're right. A steering wheel will definitely get in the way if you're trying to take a nap, right?
Make a sandwich. You know, I want to have my refrigerator in there. That's what I'm looking for. Well,
I want a popcorn maker. That's what I.
Yeah, and heck, at that point, you know, really, do you even need the windows to be clear? Uh-huh. You know, make that into you're just in a bubble of sensory, input. Think about watching movies in 360 degree movies. They could start designing movies based around that you're sitting in a vehicle. And make these sort of interactive, like they've got these virtual reality movies that you strap a piece of, some cardboard in your phone to your head and look like a goofball. you could at least be looking like a goofball inside of your private vehicle instead of.
So your vision for the future of cars is just one kind of big Oculus Rift device.
Yeah. Why
some
not?
Sort of virtual reality rather than looking out the window.
Yeah.
And exactly. Other human beings and the scenery and such.
Yeah. Or make the scenery part of the interactive experience. Imagine, you're a big fan of AMC's The Walking Dead, and everywhere you're driving and everywhere you look is, a post-apocalyptic zombie overrun landscape. I think that would appeal to some people.
Wow, that'd be one way to get the kids to behave.
I mean, if you're in LA, that's not even that tough to do. You know, you just really got to throw a couple zombies and you're done.
Great. I don't know. You just turned me. You just turned me from somebody that's very interested in technology to a Luddite. I'm not going for any of this. I'm unplugging everything.
Oh, yeah, I know, I know. Well, you know, you're getting help. You know, you're almost half. I don't know what you guys consider the French, you know, up there, but whatever you consider them, they're under attack right now. Did you hear that?
Oh, cyber attack?
Yeah, 19,000 French civilian websites are under attack by hackers, according to France's head of cyber defense, Arnaud Cotier. He said at a press conference on Thursday. I have no idea if I got that correct or not. These hackers are going after. Now, they haven't really pinned it on anyone specifically, any group specifically, but it seems to be, from what they're reporting, a kind of a quid pro quo sort of response. The hacker group Anonymous, which has kind of in recent days turned from this, oh, we hate Anonymous, to, oh my gosh, they're supporting free speech all over the place. They blocked a jihadist website last week in order to show their support for the Je Suis Charlie, for the Charlie Hebdo issues. And so now there's this retaliation from jihadists, and they're going after everything that they can in France, and it's very, very strange. You know, Al-Qaeda has claimed responsibility for the physical acts that happened in France, but no one so far has stepped up to say that they're helping to coordinate all of the cyber attacks. So we'll see how that comes through. You know, and this falls into, I mean, Jay's predictions from last week may come true, toot sweet, to follow up on the French thing.
I'm trying to, like, a little humor when you're talking about cyber terrorism.
Yeah, anyway. Well, you know, Charlie Hebdo was a humor magazine.
Yeah, that's true. I'm just jealous because I didn't think of it.
But we may hit that prediction quick. If you recall, he predicted that there would be a physical response to a purely cyber intrusion sometime this year, and gosh, you know, sadly that may prove to be true sooner than later. I wonder if they'll get confused and start attacking the Quebecois too. That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, well, what about the cyber caliphate? That's something that's happening, and I didn't realize this. I just when you mentioned that, the cyber caliphate, and that was just in the news. But when I did a Google search for it, it turns out that this was actually reported in September 11th of 2014, that they're trying to establish a Islamic extremist cyber caliphate to carry out hacking attacks.
Interesting. And I had not heard a whole lot about that. And you're right. I just did a quick Google as well. And it is being, they are being associated with this most recent attack on France. I had heard about them purely in relationship to, you know, kind of ISIS kind of thing going on, that they were part of that whole situation with, you know, where they're really kind of entering the 21st century, and you've got 21st century terrorism, and that they're hitting on all fronts. And, you know, it's ISIS has got those phenomenal video record, you know, stuff that they're doing and all that, which is looking very professional compared to previous stuff. This is one part of that, I guess.
Yeah, terrorist geeks. I mean, it's certainly a cause for concern. And did you hear about the hackers taking over the Twitter accounts of the New York Post and United Press International?
Yes.
On Friday, you know, they wrote bogus messages. One of them was stating that World War III had broken out between China and the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a a little, you know, you talked about me using humor I don't know if you consider that. that was a little creepy and an odd thing to happen. You know, again, no one is stepping up to take responsibility for these things. Twitter accounts notoriously are easy to hack. You know, and the word hack is thrown around so loosely that, you know, I fear that when we say, oh, the Twitter account was hacked, that this brings to mind these large multinational organizations, you know, like the Cyber Caliphate or whatever, that are actively breaking into things. And the reality is probably a lot more mundane, that you've got someone at CNN or New York Post who is just teed off about something, they got fired, happened to keep the password or have it, and then just said, hey, let's you know, I'm gonna make my old boss look like an idiot. And
yeah, the hacks, they said the hacks were very brief and they recovered control of their accounts very easily, which would suggest that they changed their password.
Yeah.
So the bad news is that this happened.
They capitalized.
The good news is that one of the people that was attacked was the New York Post.
Yes. That's right. Oh, man.
And speaking of creepy, you mentioned creepy that when you're talking about some of these hacks. Google Glass is what's going on with them? They're ending their marketing program, or their, what do they call it? They called it the Explorer program, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you could basically, for a large chunk of change, get in and be wearing Google Glass. But now that's ended. So is it a retreat? Have they given up on the idea altogether? But it's there. But I think, but last year, think about how hot Google Glass was last year, the hype about Google Glass. It's cooled down considerably this year. And I'm thinking that the creepy factor might be the reason why.
Yeah. You know, I would be surprised if Google Glass is dead. I think they're going to retool it. I think there was a lot of pushback from it. It may just have been the wrong time, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah, well, they banned it from strip clubs, which I've right there, I'm not getting one.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. Hey, if I can't wear, you know, what am I going to do 4 days out of the week then? You know, I got to find some place to store that safely. Come on. But you know, I think too, it was, it was a little, you know, it just wasn't quite anything it needed to be. I could see it, though, coming back less as a general application product and with more specific usage in place. You know, you look at places where something like that would be incredibly useful. Maybe professions where you're already wearing something over your face anyways, you know, and I'm thinking of, you know, surgeons, welders, you know, things like this where, gosh, if you could overlay on top of that some really critical information and you're already wearing something on your head anyways, you know, that would be awesome. Or you think about, for example, our police force, same thing. We're requiring our police force to wear cameras anyways. Perhaps you put Google Glass on them all, and not only do they get the, you know, onus of having every action recorded, but they get the benefit of having an overlay of information, facial recognition. Google Translate has evolved to the point now where if you take a picture of a sign, it will automatically translate it to your, you know, favored language. Imagine just having that turned on your eyeballs all the time, and you're a police officer maybe with halting Spanish in a primarily Latino neighborhood. You can quickly see what things mean. I can see just a world of use for it. I'd hate to think that something this valuable and useful would be just dead right now.
Yeah, it's kind of curious, the social reaction. People really did not seem to be ready for this. There were stories of people, of Google Glass wearers actually being physically assaulted for wearing their devices.
Yeah, well, you know, hey, I got assaulted just for wearing regular glasses when I was a kid, so.
yeah, I suppose that could do it. Yeah.
So
I don't know. Yeah, I agree with you completely that it'd be a shame if it was lost. And I guess its whole association with the Borg probably didn't help, right? That, you know, the people had that imagery of Jean-Luc Picard with the device on his eyes. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what form it takes next, or how Google regroups as to how to have this be more acceptable. I think they need a great, like you say, a surgeon. If they, you know, if they did a marketing campaign with a surgeon showing how valuable this was to him, in his work, then it might gain greater acceptance. But they've got work to do for sure, I think.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, and one of the biggest complaints that I heard about it, and that most of the early adopters complained about, was just that the interface was very poor. It was very difficult to use. It was cumbersome. There was a rotating carousel thing, I guess, that you had to fiddle your way through. And unless you really had good results with the, you know, the OK Google sort of thing, the voice reco, you still had, you had to be up there, you know, touching your glasses all the time to flip through. You know, now that wearables are becoming more prevalent, who knows? You know, maybe this will come through. Now, Google is doing other good stuff, though, too. In fact, they just it looks like they're going to make an offer to buy SoftCard, which is a mobile payments company. Now, they were formerly they're a mobile payment, since we were talking terrorism. The mobile payments company, they were formerly known as ISIS. Unfortunately, they've since changed their name to SoftCard. Probably a good,
there you go,
good marketing choice.
Why didn't they call themselves the Borg?
Yeah, they've since changed their name to Al Qaeda. And yeah. Oh man, I don't know, but so they're looking at them closely. Insiders say, which I think could be an interesting thing to have happen. Of course, I've been testing on a number of different phones from different providers. AT&T's got their own wallet thing. Verizon's got their own wallet thing. Verizon's, I think, is a little better. But for my money, I don't want to put it in a carrier. You know, I want to put, you know, I've got a lot of stuff wrapped up with Google. I love Google's wallet. I use it for all of my, you know, one-off little discount cards and also retail cards and like going to the library. I don't bring my library card. It's just, it's on my Google wallet. I just pop my phone out and it goes.
Really? That's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. No, you can do it with just about anything that just requires a simple barcode. I even have my Starbucks card loaded on there, which is nice because sometimes that Starbucks app is a little slow to run or a little hinky, or if they do an update, you have to log in again, and it can be frustrating. I've got it.
Okay, so what do you use to do that? What do you use to put those barcodes on your phone so that they're readable by scanners?
Oh, it's very, very simple. So you get a Google Wallet. You get a Google Wallet account. You go in there, and many of the membership cards, it's already got the capability to know. Like, you can just tell it, I'm going to enter a Starbucks card. And you have two ways of entering the information. The simplest is if you have an actual physical card, you just take your phone, you know, the camera, and you hover it over the barcode, and it just, boom, reads it and then reproduces that on your phone for you. Otherwise, you can type in the numbers that are underneath the barcode. Like for my library ID, I just typed in my library ID. It converted it to that barcode for me, and it's all done. So it's very, very easy to use. Very easy to use.
So you use electrons to check out paper at the library. That's interesting.
Yeah. Pretty much. That's about what it comes down to. Hey, you know what? We got to call RoboForm. I'm going to call him that too. Rob from RoboForm.
RoboForm. Oh, I thought you had it right there for a minute. You know what? Because I was thinking a RoboCop. Yeah, so this is RoboForm.
RoboForm, and we're going to give him a call. I'm going to have him pronounce his last name. Let's see if I can add him to the call here. Let's see how this works.
Yeah. Scanning his...
We're giving it a shot here, man. You know, well, this is great, too, because earlier we couldn't get anything to work on the board this morning, so I'm very happy. I'm adding people and doing all sorts of good stuff.
Good for you.
Yeah, I'm all teched up. I'm making my money.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mr. Rob DeNuzio. I should have you pronounce your name, make sure I don't get it right. Welcome to the show. We're happy to have you on. Why don't you give us a couple-second intro and tell us who you are and what RoboForm is.
Great. Thanks, Mike. I'm happy to be on the show this morning. And so I am Rob DeNuzio, as you said. You did pronounce it pretty correctly, so very impressive on that front. But I'm the marketing manager for RoboForm, which is an online password manager that basically allows all of our consumers to store all of their passwords behind one master password, allowing for a lot of safety and security that they would not otherwise have not using a password management product. So I'll go into that a little bit, but basically what it is, you can download it on your PC, Mac, iPhone, Android device, or Windows phone. And it synchronizes all of your logins between all of the different locations, so you'll be able to take your passwords with you wherever you go and be secure while doing it.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, and that certainly it's something that we've talked about a tremendous amount on the show here, of course, you know, with so many things happening and trying to maintain so many different passwords and things. And then you hear about so many times it doesn't work and your information is hacked or people get into your private accounts and things. And so it's just a terrible thing. And that's one thing that's been really tough, too, is lately been, you know, what types of recommendations you can make for people. It used to just be, oh, make sure you've got a password and that you're not putting it on a piece of paper stuck underneath your keyboard. But but things have kind of evolved a little bit. It's gotten a little tougher to feel safe. What types of things are you seeing being recommended, or would you personally recommend for people to make sure that the passwords that they have are appropriate and that they're, you know, not as easily gotten into?
Well, Mike, we definitely still recommend that people do not write down their passwords and keep them under their keyboard. So that still definitely applies and probably will continue to apply until biometric scanning is fully integrated into everything we see. But for now, what we really recommend is, first and foremost, using a unique password for each website that you log into. As you said, there have been a lot of well-publicized hacks in the last year and 2 years, and I'm sure that will continue. That trend will continue, unfortunately, this year and beyond. So the idea is to limit the damage. So if, let's say, your social media account password gets hacked, you also don't want that password being compromised if you use the same password in your bank account, your credit card, and other sensitive information, and either other non-sensitive information, because you have to go through the hassle of changing it, making sure your data wasn't compromised in those other locations. So First and foremost, we recommend make sure to use a unique password for each website that you log into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great point. I know, and all of us, I think, have been guilty of that at one time or another, where it's just so easy. You've got one password that you remember. You don't want to have to try and keep thinking of new ones or remembering new ones. And, and it's been difficult. It's been difficult to make sure that you do have unique passwords everywhere. And I think that's where, having some tools that allow you to maintain those is important for people. And what about this whole thing with the complexity of the passwords? I know that's something that causes endless frustration for my wife, and that she has such, and to all of us, certainly, I'm picking on my wife here, but to all of us, certainly, that, you know, you've got to have special characters. It's got to be so long, you know, and all this. It gets to the point where it's just completely, there's no possible way that you could remember it. How much safety does that provide you, number one? You know, how essential is that? And, and are there ways to kind of make that easier to deal with?
Sure. Well, obviously, that does compromise the integrity of the password if you're using a very simple word. The first thing we recommend is not to use terms that are in the dictionary. Do not use dictionary words in there. If you're going to use, for example, the word baseball, turn the L's into the number one, capitalize the B, turn the A's into at signs or ampersands. There's a lot you can do to still remember a password, even to stay secure with it, but definitely do not use passwords that are in the dictionary, because those are the easiest ones to hack. Very often, let's say an enterprise is looking, a hacker is looking to hack a business or an enterprise, they'll actually just go in and test all of the passwords of all of the usernames to see if any of them are password or 123 or ABCD. So that's really the easiest way that hackers can get into your account, is if you use those very generic dictionary type or successive number, like 12345 passwords. So don't do that, for sure. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, we definitely recommend using a variety of upper and lowercase letters, numbers, special characters. And, you can do it in a way that you can remember. That'd be great, like my baseball idea. Or you can do something like use a password generator. RoboForm and several of the other password managers out there have a password generate feature, which will actually generate a password for you that's complete gibberish. The idea being that you'll save it into a password management system, so you won't have to remember it. But that's really the best way to do it, is to just have it completely randomly generated for you. And then obviously, as we talked about before, doing that for each individual login that you have. Mm-hmm. Now, you also spoke about the length of the passwords. We recommend at least 8 to 10 characters. If you can do more, that's great, but definitely not any less than that. So even if you have a gibberish 3 or 4 character password, there are some algorithms out there that can still hack that because of its short length.
Which kind of lends, you know, some questions from that too. And I'm sorry, we're kind of like diving in really specifically here, really quickly. Normally chat, you know, at a higher level. But this is, I think this is something that's just so personal to people, you know, and they understand it so well because we all have to do it all the time, and it's so difficult.
Absolutely.
Sometimes. You know, one concern or frustration is, okay, yeah, I'd love to use a tool like RoboForm or something like this. But then there's one password that gives me access to all of the other passwords. So isn't that less secure than having it on a piece of paper or something? Or how is that more secure for me?
Well, actually, in RoboForm, I can't speak to any of the competition about what their backend security is. But for RoboForm, all of your passwords are stored behind one what we call master password. So that is the one password you will have to remember, and we actually cannot reset it for you because it's not stored anywhere on our servers or in the cloud. So that's the one key, so to speak, to unlock the rest of your passwords. So we recommend making that one very secure. And in doing so, you'll be the only one that has access to that password. And it is not stored on our servers, like I said. It's not stored in the cloud. So really the only way that someone could conceivably take that password is if they had a keylogging program installed on your computer where they were actually seeing which keystrokes were logged at which times. And obviously that opens up a completely other can of worms if you do have a security issue like that on your machine. But yeah, the master password is what actually encrypts all of the other data within RoboForm and keeps your password secure within.
Excellent. Yeah. And that's the thing is, you know, trying to find that balance and understanding, you know, what your passwords will do for you and what they won't. And I know that's one thing we've talked about a lot here too, is one of the recommendations that I typically make for people, and I'm curious to hear your take on it, is if you have the option that you can go for a dual authentication solution, that you should always take it, you know, whether it's Google or your bank or whatever. Are you familiar with the dual authentication stuff that's out there and how those are used?
I am, yes. And actually, RoboForm itself, we have a dual authentication. And basically, for those listeners that don't know what that is it's just a separate way of confirming a PC or device is saved within your profile. So let's say that I have RoboForm and I log in for the first time from a new computer or new device. RoboForm is going to say, we don't recognize this device. Would you like to confirm it? And in that case, we can send you an email or a text message to your registered email or phone number to ensure that that device is being accessed by you. And then you could save that in the future. So not only us, but a lot of banks, credit cards also have this feature. And it is a great feature to take advantage of because it does confirm that someone is not trying to access your account from a location where you are not. So it's just an added layer of security that a lot of companies and software have implemented recently. So yes, I definitely recommend taking advantage of that if you do have a bank, software, credit card, or whatnot that does offer that.
Excellent. Yeah, that's, and like I said, and I use that myself, and it's great. You know, it is at an extra step, and I think that's probably what keeps people from using good passwords, right? Is that it's irritating. You know, at a certain point, you just want to get in and do your work, you know?
That's true, Ed, but you just have to think about, you know, our psychology is we want to have things done as quickly as possible. But if you think about it, it's a lot more hassle if your account is hacked. Then you have to go through the process of if the credit card credit was the credit card, you gave me a new one, confirming that there were no unauthorized purchases. So it really pays to spend a few extra seconds up front to protect yourself in the long run.
Absolutely. And that leads actually to another question I've got too. So I just got myself a Samsung Galaxy Note 4. It's great. I love it. And it's got and up to this point, I haven't really been, and I know this is terrible, I have not really been into using the lock screen and locking down my my phones, you know, and of course I've got so much stuff on our phones these days. I was just talking to Dave about, you know, I use Google Wallet and I've got Mint on here and all these other things. So now finally I get this and it's got a pretty decent, in fact, fingerprint reader in order to keep the screen locked. How important do you think it is to have your mobile device locked down, and are there ways to manage the passwords that you use for all of those little apps? And that's one of those frustrations too. You know, it's tough enough not only to remember a password and type it in on your computer, but if you're doing it on your phone and trying to figure out how to get all the crazy characters, and it's a quote from Kublai Khan in My Pleasure, you know, whatever it is that you've got as your password phrase.
Absolutely. And like you said, you know, you have so much information stored on your phone this day and age. You know, Google Wallet, all of your apps. You may have some notes in there that have personal information in them. So it is very important to secure your phone, whether it be by PIN number or by biometric login, like fingerprint scan, like some of the newer phones have. But obviously, you definitely want to take advantage of that if you can, because if someone were to steal your phone or you leave it somewhere, you know, it's not necessarily a hacker issue. It's, you know, an everyday person with bad intentions could come in and find a lot of your personal information. So I would be very careful about that. And if you do have the opportunity and your phone does offer that protection, I would definitely enable the fingerprint scanning or the PIN login. Now, moving on to what you said about the apps, yes, it's definitely important to, if the app itself has a feature, to have a login or a password, to also take advantage of that. I know our software is an app as well, and we require a fingerprint or a PIN number to get into the RoboForm app, because within our app, you can actually log into all of your logins that you would have on your desktop, PC or Mac computers. So it is definitely important in that case, and you know, you definitely want to protect yourself as much as you can in these cases, because you know, your phone is coming with you wherever you go. So that's just another layer of security that you can add to help keep yourself protected. And the convenience feature of it, you know, using a password manager in that case, is it's very frustrating to type in a password on a desktop, but it's even more frustrating on the little keypad on a phone. So you can also log in securely to your logins through your mobile device as well.
Mm. Excellent, excellent. Now I know Dave Dave Sinaki is with us, our co-host, and I know.
Hi, Rob.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, good.
And I know Dave is like incredibly secure, right, Dave? You've got multiple passwords for everything, and
here's a question. This may or may not be in your ballpark. If you root your Android device, is that more secure or less secure?
I'm sorry, if you lose your Android device?
Jailbreak it.
I'm not really sure. I'm not really well versed in the actual back end security of the devices itself. However, I would say, you know, it comes pretty secure from the factory, and it does allow you to take advantage of those secondary login types like PIN numbers and biometrics. So I would take advantage of those. But as far as anything on the back end of the device itself, I wouldn't be able to comment very well on that.
Yeah, I think I've heard, David, and I might be giving you wrong information, but I think I've heard the general recommendation is not to root your device. Now, of course, that comes from, you know, from a security standpoint. Of course, that comes from, though, that comes from like corporate IT departments who, you know, if you root your device, then, you know, they can't manage it as easily. Either, and that's also a concern and an issue. That's an interesting direction to take the conversation as well. We've been talking about it from a very personal level and from a very individual level, but of course, every corporation has got, you know, so many employees. These employees have access to their internal networks, more and more so. Do they have access to those networks via mobile devices and via devices like their laptops and tablets? are there ways that the passwords that these people use and the ways that they access the networks can also be secure? Are there any ways that those can be kind of managed a little bit better by corporate, making corporate IT as happy as the employees can be with the ease of access to the systems?
Sure. Well, with corporate IT, you see a lot of the smaller corporations letting their employees bring their own device, or BYOD it's called. And that obviously takes some security concerns to the next level because, you know, let's say that there's a malware program on an individual employee's machine or on their device. They could bring that into the network of the corporation when they log in from their office. So there are some certainly security concerns when it comes to that. So a lot of corporations issue their own phones to the employees to use specifically for work-related activities. That's a good idea if you are a larger company and can afford that. If you cannot, I would definitely say that training is very important for any employees that are going to be bringing their own devices into the network and using them for work purposes, just to make sure that they understand the risks and they follow very strict personal practices when it comes to online security, because a personal security issue brought into the workplace can become an issue for everyone else within the office or the network. So that's very important to consider. As well as we see a lot of corporations through our enterprise division are requiring employees to change the passwords after 30 days, or in some cases 60 days, again, just to refresh and add that extra layer of security. Because, you know, I'm guilty of it. A lot of people are guilty of it. We don't change our passwords. Even if they are secure, we don't change our passwords. And the issue with that becomes, you know, we've seen a lot of the well-publicized hacks within the last year. But for all of those hacks, I mean, there are definitely other hacks out there that have not yet been recognized or not have been publicized. So just because you haven't heard that your information may have been compromised doesn't mean necessarily that it has not been. Mm. So not to make people be paranoid about it, but requiring employees change the passwords every 30 or 60 days is another layer of security that a lot of companies take while employees use their own devices and using the company-issued devices as well.
Yep. You know, that's a great point. I mean, I think it took something like 6 months before the Target hack was revealed, in fact, to people.
Yeah.
So, yeah, anybody that didn't go in and change their password or change their credit card and all the other stuff. And I've heard that recommended, too. I don't know what your thoughts are on that. Is that they've said for everybody that, you know, once a year, you should actually cancel and have reissued all of your credit cards. That's really one of the better ways to be safe these days is just, you know, passwords, credit cards, everything like that. You should just assume that everything's got an expiration date and you set times up for rolling those over.
Absolutely. And, you know, that may be a little extreme in some cases, and I'm sure the credit card companies do not recommend that. But, you know, And the thing is, you know, that's an added layer of security. Some people choose to do that. But something interesting, I just got a new credit card in the mail a few weeks ago, and the expiration date is only 2 years away. Whereas I remember when I got them 4 or 5 years ago, they would have expiration dates 3 or 4 years out. So it looks like there's some change in the mentality of the credit card companies themselves in that respect. But, you know, if you do want to add that extra layer of security for yourself, it's certainly within your right as a credit card holder. But I also remind people that, you know, as long as you're checking your credit card statements, at least on a weekly basis, you should be able to see if there's any fraudulent purchases. And that's something we recommend, especially for the older crowd that may not use online management of their credit cards or bank accounts, is to check, you know, even if it's by phone once a week, and make sure that there are no unauthorized purchases or holds with on your account. So that could be another way to protect yourself on your credit card or debit card, is to make sure that there are, you know, to check it every week, we recommend at least, to make sure that no one has gone in there and made any purchases or holds on your account. So back to your question, yes, you can certainly cancel your credit card once a year and just get a new number. But there are also other steps you can take, and definitely being vigilant of your accounts and account activity is the number one thing we recommend in that respect.
Yeah. I think that that probably is the most important thing. And there's actually, we've had as cool sites of the week. We've had that. There's apps out there that will help you manage that. Of course, you know, every time you go into and use an app like that, you're giving it access to also be in your accounts, and you know, it's one more vector of.
Sure, and it's one more reason to password protect or fingerprint protect your phone as well.
Exactly. There's just no way you can get around it. And it seems that, you know, like you were saying earlier, it doesn't matter how well you work and how hard you try to protect yourself. You know, it's the big companies are getting hacked into, the Targets and the Home Depots and the Sonys and all this. And, you know, no matter how good your password is, I mean, does it matter, really? You know, at the end of the day, you know, if no one steals your phone, but they can still get all your information because they hacked into Target, you know, does it matter anymore what your passwords are like?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And we also recommend that our users and everyone out there also check their credit reports on a constant basis, because, you know, just because someone hasn't made an unauthorized purchase on a credit card doesn't mean that they haven't gone and applied for a new credit card. And obviously, in that case, it becomes more of identity theft, and that means they probably have your Social Security number and some other very sensitive information of yours. But that's just another step for yourself, is to check your credit reports as often as you can. And there are several free outlets out there that let you check it for free without having to pay for it. So I would definitely recommend that people keep on top of their credit reports at the same time.
Yeah. Or you could, like Dave does. Dave, you change your Social Security number every couple of years too, right? So
I just change countries.
Oh, okay. Well,
there you go.
Which works out about the same, you know. I'm going to ask you a personal question, Rob. So what do you consider your biggest failing? You know, because you work for security. You know, I think they should change the pronunciation to RoboForm. We were talking about that earlier. I think it'd just be easier for everybody that talks to you. But
that also has a negative connotation too. So I don't know.
I didn't think about that. Yeah. It didn't even occur to me. But for you personally, you can make it a friend of yours. You know, what do you see like the toughest thing for you? You know, you should do it, and you just, oh man, you're like, every time you don't, you go, I hate that I don't do this. Is there something like that, or are you just on top of it? Are you crack on this?
Well, I try to be on top of it as much as possible, obviously being in the industry. But you know, let's say I'm signing up for a newspaper online. My first gut reaction will be to use a password that I can remember. Let's say I'm signing up for it on my phone, which is very common these days. Your gut instinct is to just use something quick so you can get into your and read the article. However, you may want to just reconsider and use something like the password generator we spoke about earlier, and use a unique password, because, like I said, let's say one of the big newspapers are hacked that you just wanted to read an article about, and they get that password, then, you know, they may be able to access some other accounts of yours as well, especially if you use an email address to log in, because that's generally a very common username that you'll use across the web. So, you know, one thing I'm guilty of is definitely that gut reaction of using the same password or my go-to password. If I'm just looking to log in to read an article or to, you know, subscribe to something online. But it is very important to use unique passwords for each website. And like we said earlier, that just limits the amount of damage that can happen. Like if your data becomes compromised, it will only be compromised in that one login, and not in every other login that you use throughout the web. So that would be the number one thing that I need to work on, is just that mentality of taking the easy way out right up front, rather than taking an extra minute or two to generate a secure password and save it within a password manager.
Well, you know, and that's a good point, though. I do the same thing, and I'm somewhat intentional about it, though, in that I've got a garbage password, I consider it, you know, where it's for websites that are not going to have any real detailed personal information. You know, maybe they're just going to have my email address, something like this. But exactly, you know, so I can get in and read an article or whatever. I've got just one easy to remember, easy to type password. And I only use it for those types of sites. I don't use it for anything that would have access to email or, you know, bank accounts or other things. Is that still a problem to have a kind of a trash password like that? A trash word?
That's not a problem in and of itself. Good word, by the way. But you know, it becomes, if you're used to using that password and you slip up and let's say you have a new credit card and you use that just not thinking, that's when it becomes an issue. So we try to really change people's overall mentality when it comes to online security. So, you know, if you use it once, is it going to be an issue? Probably not. If you use it for a few instances, probably not an issue. But it's when you repeat that behavior over and over online is when, you know, you could slip up and use it for something that you shouldn't be using it for, like a bank account. Mm. And that's when your data could be at risk. So, you know, I'd say, you know, it's probably not going to hurt you to use it a few times. But, you know, if you want to really err on the side of caution, I would say don't have a throwaway password. But, you know, that being said, we just did a big survey of a lot of people in the U.S. and the U.K. And the average person logged into about, I want to say, 26 different logins in a given week. So, you know, that can be a very daunting task to have 26 or 27 unique passwords. And then there's those other logins that you don't use more often than once a month. So a lot of people have 40 or 50 logins saved within their password manager. And again, if you're not using a password manager or another tool to manage your password, it's tough to think about having that many unique passwords. But, you know, it is what we recommend. And if you have a trash word that you use, it's really not going to hurt you if you use it very diligently once or twice on just to read an article. But again, it's definitely not recommended for sure.
Mm-hmm. Boy, I wish I had only 40 passwords or so. I just pulled up my password manager. It's not RoboForm, so I won't say what it is. But I've got probably 75 just on the first page alone. And I've got some organized and sorted and things, and it just goes on and on. Now, of course, I never throw any away. So I've also got, passwords from like three positions ago. it gets really, really tough. And Rob, I gotta apologize. We're getting really close here, right up to the end of our time. I'm gonna give Dave another crack. Did you have any other questions we didn't get to with Rob today, Dave?
Just a comment. You know, we've spent so much time complaining on this program about security and how to improve it, and this sounds like a great helpful tool to address that.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, even if you're just using RoboForm for a couple of logins, it's great. You know, we have people anywhere from one or two logins all the way up to several hundred logins. So it really allows you to just keep more track of your online security and kind of spearhead any issues that may come up when it comes to hacks. You know, you can say, my email was hacked. That's not great, but you know, I can at least rest assured that my other passwords are not compromised and simply have to go in and change that one password. So it definitely helps you. And it obviously the convenience feature there as well, not having to type or remember all of your passwords. So it definitely works on two fronts, the security and the convenience of your online presence.
Yeah. And it's easy to do too. In fact, I've got a Linux machine that I run off of Linux Mint, but I use Chrome and there's a little extension for it. You just pop it in and it runs. Where should people go for more information about, I'm going to still call it RoboForm. If they want to find out more about RoboForm or, and the related products that you've got, the extensions, the plugins, the software, you know, the free and paid services and all that, what's the best place to find out about that?
Yeah, you can just go to RoboForm.com, RoboForm.com. And all the information you need is right there. We talk about a lot of the security that we just discussed, as well as some of the more technical back-end security that we have on our product, as well as a lot of the uses that you can have. You know, you can have it on all of your Macs, PCs, devices, an unlimited number. And we talk about all of that and how to install it in your different browsers, how to install it on your phones, your tablets. So it's really easy to get started with. And just go to RoboForm.com. And we'll walk you through the process right there. And it's very easy. You can be up and running in about 5 minutes, install and setup all included. So it's very easy to check out, and I would definitely recommend everyone use a password manager, even if it's not RoboForm, just to stay secure online.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Very cool. Well, thank you so much, Rob. Really appreciate you you joining us and giving us some really, really good information. I know this was stuff it's not only important, but the people are interested in. So that was fantastic. I'm going to let you run, shouts out and thank you very much. And I'll make sure that the links to RoboForm.com are available on our website as well for anybody that missed writing that down.
All right. Thanks again, Mike, and have a great morning, guys.
Awesome. You too.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rob.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Rob DiNuzzo from RoboForm.
Great guy.
Yeah, great info. We are so fortunate. We really do get some great people on and great companies and information. Our very own Rob Rigel is ready to rock and roll here, though, too. He's got some great stuff. He's going to be talking about the Fermilab and some people down there, too. So local scientists doing good stuff, I think. So I'm going to let him go into that. We're not even going to attempt Cool Sites of the Week this week. We'll just have RoboForm.com as being the cool site of the week. And Dave, I'm going to let you roll back to your little haven in Canada.
You're see y'all next haven. Week. Thanks
All right.
for listening.
Thanks, Dave. Have a great week. Say hi to Jay for me. You're Jay, not RJ Garmin. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Take care. Bye. Dave Sparky Saganaki, always great to have him on too. And I was not kidding. We've got Rob Rigel on Rob Shot First coming up here any moment now. As I said, I'm not even gonna do like a song of the day or anything. Podcast only song of the day. We're just gonna cut right over. Thank you so much for listening to Tech Talk on WRLR 98.3 LP FM in Round Lake Heights, Illinois. And don't.